Every Taurian female goes into heat, and every Taurian male is hit with the need to rut with abandon until the conquest moon passes. It's not convenient. If you have a wife, I'm sure it's fine. Fun, even. But I don't have a wife. I don't even have a lover. My work in the tunnels takes up my days, and there's no time for a woman or a family. The only female I'm ever around is Magpie, and the thought of falling upon her in a rutting frenzy makes me shudder with horror. We're friends and business partners, but that's as far as it goes. I scratch at the fur on my neck and try not to snarl when another hopeful scholar tries to push forward. Baring my teeth at him, I manage to keep myself in check, but just barely. The conquest moon is almost a month away, and yet I'm already short-tempered and impatient. I'm going to be an absolute wreck by the time the moon gets here. Timing is awful, I tell Raptor as the human moves past me with a quivering look. I need to be here in the city.
You'll murder someone and then rot their corpse if you stay here in the city, Raptor tells me with a smirk not even his nose ring can hide. And then they'll lock you up and throw away the key.
He's not wrong, but he doesn't know the half of it. Magpie needs students, yet she can't be trusted to guide them on her own. If I count on her to pull things together, we'll find ourselves with two students or no students, instead of the standard five. And then they'll quit because there's no way a team of two will pass. And then there will be no income for either of us, because Magpie will be booted from the teaching program. Magpie will spend all her time at the bars, getting laid out and moping about the past, and I'll find myself without a job. I flex my magicked hand, the fingers aching despite the fact that they're not real. If Magpie doesn't get students, I'll never get out of my indentured contract, so I have to stay. Magpie can't be left to run things alone. Can't leave, I say absently, flexing my hand again out of habit just to make sure it's there. I don't have a choice.
I always forget, Raptor says, and there's a hint of sympathy in his hard voice.
Raptor works on a five for Lord Nostrum with a constantly rotating roster. Lord Nostrum is cheap and also neglectful, and I'm pretty certain that Raptor only stays because he can sell some of the artifacts he pilfers on the black market. Everyone else realizes that Lord Nostrum is paying pennies, and so his team constantly switches out, leaving Raptor to do all the work. Sometimes I think it's not about black market sales, but just that Raptor would rather work alone than have to babysit the fools he's normally saddled with. You're leaving? Soon? I ask, crossing my arms as another scholar pushes his way in out of the rain. It's well known that Taurians make the humans nervous, and we know to stay at the fringes of the room or in the shadows. They can't do without us because we're far superior in the tunnels, but we also know when to make ourselves scarce. I remain in the doorway instead of pushing my way inside. It lets me see the entire vicinity while also letting me leave easily, or so I tell myself. Raptor shifts on his hooves.
I shouldn't, but it's pretty bad this year. I keep waking up sweaty and I can't sleep. It's either stay or spend my entire fee on whorehouses, and then another fee for the delousing I'll need after that.
I wince. If I don't leave Vast Warren for the Conquest Moon, I'm going to be the one in the whorehouses. I hate the thought. There's something cold and impersonal about having a stranger with you through your rutting. I had to utilize a sex worker last time, and it left me feeling vaguely unsettled. Took me months to feel like myself again. The whores do their job and don't discriminate between human men and Taurians, but it doesn't mean I like it. Maybe I'm particular, but I'd rather be touched by familiar hands than a stranger's, no matter how eager the stranger. But that's not looking like an option. Maybe I can slip away for a couple of weeks once Magpie has a team of fledglings established. Take the fastest coach I can or find someone with a teleportation stone, and head for one of the Taurian festivals out in the plains to the south, and just fuck everything moving for a week straight. The odds of that happening fill me with a vague sense of despair, but I'm low on options. At least the Taurian Festival is free. Any sex worker in Vast Warren City during the Conquest Moon is going to charge a premium. I don't know what I'm going to do, I admit to Raptor, gazing out at the sea of people crowding into the benches in the hall. I turn back to my brother Taurian, considering. I think an umbrella comes out of nowhere and smacks Raptor on the arm. His eyes flare with anger, and he turns so hard and so fast that the stranger, a woman, immediately stumbles into me, a mouse-like squeak in her throat. I automatically grab her and save her before she pitches to the floor. Perhaps it's all the years of practice with Magpie. My arm goes around a sturdy, corseted waist, and I haul the woman against me like a bride. Because it's either that or dump her on the floor. This isn't helping the latent heat pulsing through my veins. The Conquest Moon might be a month away, but I'm already feeling the effects. The stranger's eyes go very wide, and she takes in my features. I bet a handful of pennies that she's never seen a Taurian this close before. There's something about her demeanor that speaks of being sheltered. She gapes at me, at my bull head and horns, at the jewelry on my ears and nose. I scowl in her direction, releasing her. Watch where you're going, I snap. You could get trampled.
It is rather crowded.
She admits, straightening herself and shaking out her umbrella, which causes water to rain all over me and a few others.
Oops, my apologies.
Her gaze goes to me again and then to my shirt.
Oh dear.
I look down. Soaked orange fur clings to my sleeve in clumps, transferred from her clothing.
Sorry,
she says quickly, plucking the clump I hold up out of my grasp.
That's from my cat. She's quite the shedder. Just ignore all that.
Raptor muffles a snort of amusement, looking at me over the woman's head as she continues to pat my arm, pulling off bits of wet fur from my linen sleeves. Maybe it's just the oncoming rut making my mind focus on all the wrong things, but I can't stop staring at her. She's interesting, I think, in the way unexpected things are. Her cheeks are flushed pink, her clothing well-made, if drab, and it's all soaked and clinging to what looks like a fine, plump, sturdy figure. She's tall, nearly coming to my chin. It's a fine height for a female, and the fact that she's built solidly makes me think about her in lascivious ways that are most definitely rut-influenced. Her face is human, so I don't know if she's what they would consider pretty or not. But her eyes are big and dark and expressive, and her fingers are blunt with short nails. And busy. She has very busy fingers. If she pets my sleeve one more time, my cock is going to act up. Leave it be, I tell the drenched woman. And then because everyone in the hall is staring at her, I add helpfully, you shouldn't be here. It's the wrong thing to say. She stiffens, all softness leaving that face of hers. Her mouth flattens into a line of distaste and her head rears back.
Is that so?
You see any other women here?
Raptor joins in. The woman turns to him, scowling, and for a moment I think she's going to hit him with her umbrella again. And then I'll really have to step in.
This is the Royal Artifactual Guild's annual meeting, isn't it?
It is, says a nearby human man. Are you lost?
Her expression gets even more brittle, the color on her cheeks heightening.
Not at all. I'm here to join.
The woman's voice carries across the large chamber, and I'm not entirely surprised when all the men burst into laughter. They take one look at her, young, disheveled, female, and alone, and laugh as if they've seen nothing funnier.
Where's your chaperone, love?
One of the men calls out.
Go back home to daddy,
calls another. More laughter rings out. To her credit, the woman's expression only grows harder, more determined.
I fail to see what's so very amusing.
She pulls out a soaked pamphlet from her bodice and shakes it open.
The bylaws state that anyone may join if they arrive by Swansday and present themselves as a fledgling.
She looks up from her reading, scanning the room.
Is that not the case?
The guildmaster approaches her, a short, elderly human with a very loudly colored vest and garishly expensive clothing. He gestures at the others, indicating they should pipe down, and moves to the woman's side.
My dear, my name is Rooster. I'm the head guildmaster in charge here. Please don't be alarmed. I'm sure this is all a misunderstanding.
I'm glad we agree,
she says, her chin lifting. Even though I find her annoying, I'm impressed at her bravado.
So, where do I sign up?
I'm afraid it's not possible, Rooster continues. He holds a hand out to take the pamphlet from her, but she folds it and tucks it back into her dress. It wouldn't be correct for a woman to join a team full of men, even for training purposes.
She looks down her nose at him, and Rooster only comes up to her chin, which I find rather amusing. Her shoulders are stiff and back, and she looks ready to go to war.
If that's your only concern, then you need not worry. My friend, who goes by the name Wren, will be joining me. We both wish to learn.
She makes a benevolent gesture with her hand.
You may assign us anywhere. We are not choosy.
Raptor snorts, glancing over at me with amusement. It's not often these sorts of meetings are worth the time, and the entire crowd is now focused on the dripping woman in brown standing up to their leader. Rooster still has that patronizing smile on his face. I've seen it many times directed at Taurians, and shakes his head.
Women do not join the Royal Artifactual Guild. Everyone knows this.
Do they? Because I have read your pamphlet from back to front, and nothing is mentioned about gender in the slightest.
She tilts her head at him, regarding him in that withering way that the holders seem to use.
Might I remind you that 20 years ago, Artificer Magpie located the greatest find of our generation. And every treatise and book I have read quite clearly shows Magpie to be a woman. So you see, Cockerel, you are mistaken.
If it's a slip of the tongue, it's a clever one. Rooster's florid face turns three different colors and he straightens his clothing.
My guild name is Rooster, and Artificer Magpie is different.
In what way?
She waits, the tip of her umbrella dripping water on the floor, and holds on to the thing like a cane, her hands delicately perched upon the curved handle.
She doesn't wear skirts,
a man catcalls from the crowd, and they erupt into laughter again. This doesn't faze the woman.
So if I take them off, you'll let me attend?
More laughter floods the room, and Rooster looks as if he wants to choke someone. He fiddles with the ornate buttons on the front of his guild dress coat, a ridiculous concoction that no one who ever goes into a tunnel would wear, and adjusts his bejeweled sash, the material the deep gold color of the guild leader.
Madam, you are mistaken. It does not matter how you dress. Women have not proven themselves to be valuable members of our guild. Magpie was an aberration. She is not how we prefer to represent ourselves.
I grit my teeth, thinking of Magpie, who's no doubt curled up in a pool of her own vomit in her bed, reeking of spirits. No, I can't imagine that anyone thinks she's a good representation of the guild. Even so, they can't kick her out. As long as she's an active member, they're stuck with her. It's another reason why I can't leave for the Conquest Moon. If I abandon Magpie's side and word gets out that no one's teaching her students, she'll be removed from the guild for certain. I'll definitely have to resort to sex workers, I realize, and the thought is as unappealing as it is impersonal. Raptor wouldn't understand how I feel, though. He's perfectly happy to share a bed with anything and anyone willing. I can't let my guard down enough to do the same. My hand flexes again, phantom pain fizzling at my fingertips.
But Artificer Magpie,
the woman is saying again. Rooster clears his throat, shaking his head again.
I don't know what sorts of ideas you've gotten into your head about who we are and what we do, but I assure you that a job with the Royal Artifactual Guild is as difficult as it is dangerous. It's not a place for young women who cannot find a husband and think they can take on men's work.
Excuse me.
Her nostrils flare with anger, her eyes narrowing. and for a moment, she looks utterly magnificent in her ire.
Do you know who I am?
That response and the confident, almost arrogant way she carries herself makes me wonder.
I do not, Rooster declares. Who are you? Tell us.
She pauses, and then her demeanor changes, losing its confidence.
My name is Sparrow.
The room erupts in laughter again. Even Raptor chuckles. I don't. I don't find any of this particularly funny.
You haven't earned that name, love, another man calls out. Perhaps she's having a case of the vapors, yells another, and more laughter erupts from the room.
Rooster shakes his head again, both hands in the air to calm the onlookers. To most, he seems like a kindly, well-dressed leader, wearing finery that he's earned through his years of service to the guild. That he has a gut now just speaks to his leadership, that he's needed more for administration than actual ruin diving.
I understand your disappointment, my girl, but please understand. The guild's work is of an extremely dangerous nature. Many of our members do not make it 10 years before retiring, or worse. Every year we lose good men. Every year we are forced to retrieve competent men from the tunnels because it's too difficult.
Raptor coughs loudly, his hooped earrings jingling. It's a reminder, not that Rooster will realize it, that he's not the one rescuing men from the tunnels. That duty always falls to the Taurians. I can't count how many times I've been pulled from teaching duties or woken in the middle of the night to go on a retrieval party simply because some fool who barely passed his tests has decided that he can strike out on his own. Taurians always clean up after the humans.
It's nothing against you, Rooster continues. It's your gender. A woman in the mix will make it unsafe for the entire team. They won't be able to focus with a woman around.
She grabs her umbrella in the middle and taps the hooked end of it on Rooster's coat like a teacher lecturing a child with her ruler.
You may write this down, cock. My name is Sparrow, and you will hear from me again.
With one last nudge of her umbrella at him, she turns, her chin in the air, and storms out of the room, heading toward the doors again. Both Raptor and I step aside to let her pass, and the laughter follows her out of the hall. Raptor shoots me an amused look, as if to say that he approves of her spirit.
I like her.
I don't. All that enthusiasm has nowhere to go, just like with Magpie, and I'm tired of seeing people broken by the system, myself included. My hand aches and I flex it again. It's a reminder that this very same system owns me until I've repaid my debt.
It's Rooster!
The man left on the floor yells after her with annoyance. He swipes at the wet spot left on his coat.
Rooster!
4. Aspeth. I cry all the way back to the inn. I hate crying. It feels helpless and pathetic, and it should be reserved for dire times in one's life. I cried over the death of my mother. I cried when I overheard my fiancé Barnabas speaking to one of his friends about me, complaining that he was being forced to marry an ugly spinster for her estate. I cried again when I found out that the estate is bankrupt and defenseless, and the lives of every person at Honori Hold are in danger. That we could be conquered at any time, our people put to the sword. I've done far too much crying lately, but truly, what a pompous, arrogant little prick that Rooster fool is. If he'd known he was speaking with Aspeth Honori, Holder Honori's sole heir, he would have kissed my hem and cooed that he would do anything for me in the hopes of getting Holder Honori's commission. Because he wouldn't know we are penniless. He wouldn't let me join the guild, of course, but at least he'd properly kiss my arse. Instead, I had to swallow my pride and endure them all laughing at me because I'm a woman. I knew it wasn't common for women to join, but they made it sound like it's forbidden. I know it's not. Just because they don't think a woman can do everything a man can doesn't make them right. It makes them absolute cretins, and I'm even more determined to prove them wrong. I will find a teacher. I will pass that guild test. I will find artifacts and replenish my family's holdings and bring us back to greatness. And I will make sure that rooster fool knows who I am. My mouth screws up, and I have to fight back a fresh onslaught of tears. I can handle this. I can. I knew it wouldn't be easy. I knew that joining the guild would be fraught with complications. But I hadn't anticipated that I'd be turned away the first day. I don't know what to do. I'm not going to give up, but that doesn't mean I know how to move forward. I need to hug my cat. An hour later, I've returned to my rooms and am wearing a warm dressing gown, seated by the fire as I hold Squeaker tightly in my arms and let her lick my chin. They were horrible, Gwenna. Just horrible. I fight back another watery sniff. I didn't even get a chance to approach any of the guild members to speak my case. They don't know or care that I can read Old Prelian. All they care is that I have tits, Gwenna declares. I knew they'd hate tits. How can anyone hate tits? They don't get to touch 'em, she says, shaking her head. That makes them angry. To them, we're nothing but things to grope with no brains in our heads. I sigh heavily, feeling defeated. My sheltered life at Honori Hold hasn't prepared me for any of the challenges that vast Warren City offers. I'm entirely out of my depth. I've always been respected and obeyed because of my holder name. Now that no one knows who I am or the family I come from, I'm finding the world very different and a great deal bleaker than I imagined. I bite at my thumb, my cuticles already nibbled to a painful level. I don't know what to do, Gwenna. I do. We turn around and we leave. We go home and we figure something out. You marry some idiot for his fortune and we forget this nonsense. She doesn't understand. Gwenna doesn't realize that Barnabas would likely get rid of me once he finds out my family has no artifactual value. That our hold has no defenses, and the mystical, renowned Honori fairy fire cannons are dead, their charges expended. That our defense stones are depleted. We can't protect anyone or anything. And once that's discovered, everyone will attack us. Our neighbors, our friends, our enemies. They're going to realize we're weak and try to take over Honori Hold. If we're lucky, Father and Grandmama and I will be cast out. Unlucky? Someone will find what's left of us in the moat. And she doesn't realize that it won't stop there. Anyone with any sort of connection to us will be either driven out or killed, simply so there will be no one contesting the new rulers. I can't even approach the black market, because Honori Hold is penniless. Our credit is gone, and there's nothing to pay my father's debtors with. Father sold all of our valuable artifacts. I haven't told Gwenna that Barnabas only wanted me for my family's holdings, that he's never been interested in kissing a spinster like me, and all the times I let him touch me, he was pretending. Even now, the thought makes me feel like vomiting. It's too shameful to bear. I know I'm not particularly pretty or charming, but finding out what Barnabas really thinks of me has made me feel ashamed, like I'm some sort of disgusting creature that can only be tolerated because of the title I bring. I've tucked it all deep in my heart and kept it to myself. As far as Gwenna knows, we're low on artifacts, and I'm here to find new ones for my family. My father's gambling problems are well known by all the servants already, though I don't think they realize how vulnerable it's made all of us. I'm not leaving, I tell Gwenna softly. I don't know what we're going to do, but we're not leaving. We're not giving up. Not after we've come this far.
Mwah!
Squeaker agrees, but she also just might want out of my clinging grasp. Gwenna takes a deep breath and then jumps to her feet, pacing the room. All right, then. We're not leaving. We're still going to join the guild. So if those twits won't let you in the front door to join the guild, how do we get in the side door? Who do we know that we can pull connections with? For a moment, I stare at her in awe. Of course we're not giving up. It's time to enact another plan. I'm humbled by her faith in me, and new tears threaten, but I blink them away. Just like Gwenna isn't a hugger, gods, I could really use a hug right now, she'd hate crying even more. And those horrible men aren't worth crying over. I don't know, I admit. I don't know what we do from here. A father no longer sponsors a Guild 5 because we haven't the funding. Even if he did, we couldn't approach them because I'm not supposed to be here. Right. She pauses, drumming her fingers on her crossed arms, thinking. Well, perhaps we should find out where they drink and seduce our way into the school. A man with a tired cock can't refuse a woman anything she asks. Seduction? Me? It's not a bad plan. If she was suggesting this to anyone other than me, it'd be an excellent plan. As it is, I'm not sure I'm the right person for the job. How am I supposed to seduce someone? Sit on them and recite old Prelian poetry until they give in? I don't know the first thing about being appealing to men. The only experience I've had is with Barnabas. And I can't trust any of it. My cat twists in my arms, digging in her claws, and I let her go. Squeaker abandons me, leaving behind floating bits of fur in her wake, and I cough, waving a hand in the air to clear it. All right. Not seduction, then. Gwenna continues to pace, thinking. But if we can find out where the guild men drink, perhaps we can bribe or trick one into getting us in. I'm not sure that's going to work, I tell her, uncertain. They seem pretty against women overall. Because they were in a group, she says, all confidence. Men say very different things when they're alone with a woman. This sounds suspiciously like seduction again, but I don't have any other plan, and I don't want to give up. So we might as well give it a try. Find a nice man at a bar, talk to him, get him to realize how much this means to me, and see if he can't persuade them to let me in. I don't have the funds for bribery, but there are other things I can do. I can read and translate. I know how to deal with Holder nobility. I'm very good at etiquette. I have an excellent grasp of old Prelian history. And if nothing else seems to be effective, perhaps tits will work. We argue over who will stay with the luggage and the cat. Gwenna wants to go with me as I head out into Vast Warren City after dark, and I would love for her to accompany me as well, but I also don't want to abandon our things. Let's go downstairs and talk to the innkeeper, she suggests. Maybe she'll know something and we can go from there. It's a good compromise, and a short time later, we're downstairs in the raucous tavern room. There's a woman in the corner shouting a story at a nearby man, a large mug of ale in her hand. Two other men watch her with annoyance, and there looks to be a family tucked away at a table in the corner by the hearth. The room is dimly lit and smells of smoke. The battered tables are greasy and look as if they haven't been cleaned in years. Behind the bar, the innkeeper leans against a cask of ale, talking to a man seated by himself at the bar. He looks unsavory, and I nudge Gwenna to make sure we keep a safe distance between us and him. We settle at the other end of the bar, near the door, and the woman in the corner gets louder. And then I walloped him. She howls. Should have seen his face. I wince delicately and wait for someone to tell her to calm down. But no one does. Perhaps this is a normal occurrence here. That's worrying. The innkeeper saunters over to us, and I'd swear she's wearing the same clothing as yesterday, stains and all. She slaps at the counter with her wet rag, and it's the same one too, and smells awful. I swallow hard and decide to breathe through my mouth. You hungry? She asks us. Oh, by the five gods, I don't think I'll eat anything in this place again. I try not to stare at the dish rag in horror. We are seeking information. Gwenna puts her hand on mine, shaking her head. What my friend here is trying to say is that we're looking for men. Guild men. The barkeep eyes us as if we're fortune hunters. Mm-hmm. I suppose it's that time of year. What in the lady's name does that mean? I open my mouth to protest, but Gwenna stomps on my foot. Can you think of a better time to find a good man? She beams at the woman. Don't suppose you know where we might introduce ourselves to a few of them? See if they're lonely? See if they're lonely? Good gods. The innkeeper shrugs. She swipes at the counter with that nasty rag again, sending a fresh wave of scent in our direction, and I press a finger under my nose as if it will make a difference. You can ask the loud one in the corner, the woman says. She'll know everyone at the guild. And if you get her out of my inn before she breaks something, I'll be mighty grateful. I turn my head, craning to look at the woman in the corner with new interest. She's currently in a drinking contest with another man, both of them with their mugs tilted back and beer spilling down their faces. From what I can see of her, though, she looks to be about the same age as Gwenna and myself, though she's wearing a pair of trousers and a dark blouse that is about to be completely soaked. Thank you. Gwenna puts a penny on the counter and then grabs me by the arm, hauling me across the tavern room toward the carousing woman in the back. We march up to her table, and Gwenna speaks again, holding me against her. Excuse me, miss. The woman slams her near-empty mug down on the wooden tabletop, splashing us with the remnants of her beer. She looks over at us, then opens her mouth and gives the most unholy belch in all of history. That's very impressive, I say politely, since I'm not sure what else to say. Good job. Nasty, Gwenna agrees, waving a hand in the air. You the one who knows all the guild people? The woman shrugs. Her blonde hair is wet around her face, and I suspect it's from beer and sweat. Tendrils hang over her eyes, and I resist the urge to push them out of her way. She's younger than I originally assumed, and can't be more than 20, perhaps 22. Maybe. Who wants to know? Me. I want to join the guild, I blurt out. The man across from the blonde spews his beer out of his mouth, showering us with more booze, and then laughs as if it's the funniest thing he's ever heard. I've had enough. I grab the drink from his hand and dump it over his head. I don't think it's funny, you rockhead. The room gets quiet, and then the blonde laughs even harder. I like you, she declares. Come and join our game. She gestures roughly at the man sitting across from her. Get out of here, jailus. He gets up and leaves, and the woman pounds on the table, indicating we should sit across from her. Oh, I don't drink. Both she and Gwenna turn to me. I know when to shut up. I smile brightly instead. Very well, game it is. Gwenna and I squeeze onto the vacated bench across from the woman. I try to ignore the fact that my seat is wet, the table is too, and I'm a little worried as the innkeeper comes over with 3-4 mugs and drops them down in front of us. I'm Lark, our new friend announces. But not like the bird, because I'm told I haven't earned it yet. She rolls her eyes. So it's just lark, like an adventure, I guess. She lowers her head to her beer and slurps the foam off the top, then licks her lips. You two looking for a guild hangout? I nod eagerly. Yes. Because you want a guild man? She wrinkles her nose. They're arrogant pricks, but I guess if that's your thing. I already said I want to join the guild. Oh, right. Locke holds up a finger and then lifts her beer, chugging it. She sets the mug down with a thump, and I wait for her to blow our hair back with another staggering belch. But she only sniffs and eyes us. So, where are you ladies from? I blink because I don't have a good answer. It didn't occur to me to lie, but telling the truth seems too obvious, like I'll be discovered for sure. Gwenna steps on my foot under the table and takes control of the situation. We're coming in from the north. Yourself? Locke brightens, and not only because a refill is brought to her. I came in from the south. Left my troop because it was about time I came to Vast Warren. Troop? I ask politely. Entertaining troop. I was a sword juggler. She starts to get to her feet and knocks over the bench she was seated upon, then staggers. Gwenna grabs her arm, giving me a panicked look. We believe you. No need for a demonstration. Oh. She hiccups. All right. So, you must be good with a sword, I venture, tensing until she sits down again. That's an excellent skill to have if you're looking to join the guild. Locke grimaces. Alas, the only skill I have with the sword is actually juggling it, and I don't think the Rattlings would be much impressed with that. Rattlings? What's a Rattling? Gwenna asks. This is the first I've heard of such a thing. Oh, have I not told Gwenna about the dangers of our soon-to-be profession? You know, the tunnels below Vast Warren, the ever-below. The ruins, aye. Gwenna nods. Locke leans in and Mock whispers, They're totally crawling with these huge, oversized rats. She flings her arms out and stretches them as far as she can to indicate the size, then frowns and twists her body sideways, trying to indicate height. That tall, big, nasty, smelly, and they swarm. The look Gwenna shoots me is one of alarm. No one's ever mentioned rattlings to me. I'm sure they're not as common as they seem, I say, dismissing her fear. From what I've heard, cave-ins are far more likely. But this is why everyone who joins the guild learns sword work. Mucking lovely, Gwenna mutters. Human-sized rats. More like child-sized, Locke corrects. Or Slitherskin-sized. She lifts her beer and chugs it until she drains it, then pounds on her chest and lets out an unholy belch. So, you two wanna join the guild? We've said that, yes. I give her a tactful smile, but it takes everything I have not to fan the air in front of my face to get rid of the burp smell. Three times, Gwenna adds helpfully. Should you be drinking this much? Locke shrugs. You're not drinking enough, if you ask me. Because I want Locke to be happy with us, I lift my beer and take a sip. And then I cough. By Asteria, that is the worst flavor. It tastes like piss, a far cry from the expensive wines of my father's hold. But I smile between coughs and take another drink, or pretend to. Gwenna seems unbothered, taking a large swig and then swiping at her foamy lip. I went to the guild meeting this morning, I tell Locke, just like the guild pamphlets say to do, and before I could even sit down, they kicked me out, said I didn't belong because I was a woman, that I'd be distracting to the others in the tunnels. Cocks, Locke swears viciously. Cocks, all of them. I'm a little startled by her vehemence, but Gwenna giggles and takes a larger drink of her beer. I like her, she says, leaning over to me. I've met several, and they're all cocks. Locke continues, swiping my mug and taking a drink. She really is quite drunk, if her glassy eyes are any indication. Especially the leader. He's the biggest cock of them all. Is his name Rooster? I ask. She pounds on the table and then points at me. Yes! How did you know? Because that's who I met. My heart sinks, and I start to worry this is going to be all for nothing. Not that Locke isn't fun. Gwenna's having a great time, and Locke seems nice, if a little beer-happy. He's the one who told me I couldn't join. That cock, Locke says again with a shake of her head. She waves at the innkeeper. More beer for us. We've dealt with too many cocks today. She shouts the word across the inn. Gwenna just snort giggles into her beer. I don't know what to do, I confess, my hands curling around my half-full mug of beer. This was the plan, to show up and get accepted into the guild trainee program. I don't have the funds to bribe someone. Oh, that's easy, Locke says. You can join my fledgling group. We need five, and right now we've got four. The two of you join, and that makes five. That makes six, Gwenna corrects. Locke squints at her. Gwenna shakes her head and reaches over to pat Locke's hand. Just keep drinking. So how do you know we can join your class if the guild leader said no? And how is it you can join and you're a woman? I protest. This doesn't seem fair. Locke's going to be a trainee? Locke beams at the innkeeper when she arrives with three more mugs of beer. She pays the woman and hugs her beer to her chest, sighing happily. I'm going to miss you, she tells it. So, so much. Is it going somewhere? I ask. Can't drink when you're a fledgling, she says, and then takes another hearty swig. That's why I'm celebrating tonight. So you are a fledgling? Locke belches an affirmative, and I cover my nose with my sleeve. How did you get in when they turned me away? Oh, that's an easy one. It's my aunt's class, and she promised my mother. I figure we won't be distracting all the cocks if we're a party of girls. She wiggles her eyebrows, and then looks thoughtful. Though there is a slither skin in the class. Oh, and a man, actually. But once he finds out there's more women, I bet he leaves. He won't be able to stand the shame of us walking around with lady parts in his presence. Men do get weird around women, Gwenna agrees. I'm about to agree, too, when I realize what Locke's just said. Wait. You said it was your aunt's class? But only guild masters can teach. How is this possible? Magpie is the only woman in the current roster. Locke swipes at her mouth and then beams at us. Magpie's my aunt. She's gonna be my teacher, our teacher. Surely, surely I can't be that lucky. For the first time since arriving here in Vast Warren City, I feel a surge of excitement.
5. Hawk. Knowing Magpie as I do, I shouldn't be surprised that someone pounds on the door in the middle of the night. It's already been a particularly awful day today. Magpie didn't show up for fledgling day, being too drunk to crawl out of her bed, which left me to recruit a class of five. Given that I'm a minotaur and humans are naturally afraid of anything that looks different or could destroy them with a single swipe, it was a spectacular failure. I only had to recruit three, since Magpie has already given two seats away. One's for Lark, her headstrong niece, and the other is for a priestess of some kind. All Magpie would say is that she lost a bet, and I'm concerned the priestess is going to be as hard a drinker as Magpie is. But humans don't trust Taurians, or even particularly like us. All I managed to recruit was a Slitherskin, who looks barely old enough to leave his family's hatching grounds, and a young merchant's son named Gilam, who already looks as if he's going to bolt once he has a better offer. Four isn't enough, though. Four won't qualify us to have a class of fledglings. We need five. I should be out with the other guild Taurians, celebrating another year of business. A full class means the odds of a student passing are that much greater. Any student who completes the certification at the end of the year becomes a full-fledged guild member. And to pay back their training, they tithe a quarter of their earnings for the first 5 years. But I don't have enough students for this year, and last time Magpie was in charge of training, we had no one pass because she was in her cups more than she was out of them. If we don't get more students trained and working for the guild patrons, we won't have enough funds to live on. The thought runs circles in my head, making me pace. I don't drink, though. Watching Magpie ruin herself with alcohol has killed that particular vice for me. The pounding on the door gets louder, and I growl to myself as I throw on a pair of breeches, then storm down the hall to the entrance of the dormitory. If this is one of Magpie's drinking friends. When I throw the door open, a snarl on my mouth, I'm ready to shove the idiot down the alley. It's not one of Magpie's drunken friends, though. It's her niece, Lark, who seems to be following in her aunt's footsteps. She's clearly drunk, her eyes red and slitted. A dopey expression on her face as she sees me. Her gaze roams over my bare chest and my unbelted pants, which are threatening to fall down my hips.
Damn.
Shut up. I'm your teacher, and you should be in your room, not ogling my chest. I gesture up the stairs, angry at her carelessness. Classes start at dawn.
Classes don't start until we have five, because five is the sacred number.
She corrects, staggering in a step to get out of the rain. She belches, then waves a hand in front of her face and mine.
Whew! I'm ripe enough to scare the rattlings in the ever below. Glad you finally woke up. I've been knocking forever.
I should have left you out there, I growl.
You wouldn't. You're too nice.
She pats my bare arm, squeezes it just a little more than she should, and then weaves over to the bench by the door and flops down.
Nice and built. You should be glad I'm here, Hawk. I've got solutions.
Not likely. You don't tell a Taurian he's nice, I grumble. You tell them that they're fearsome. As for you, you're an absolute tunneling mess, Lark. If you plan on going into the Everbelow, you need to be sobered. I trail off as two strangers step inside from out of the rain, wearing cloaks and carrying bags. One drags a muddy cart in after her, both of them dripping water and leaving a trail on the clean floors. The first stranger shakes off a hood, showing a round, displeased face as she glares at me and then her surroundings. What is this? I ask, and then the second person removes their hood. It's the woman from the recruitment meeting earlier, the tall, bossy one in brown who declared that she was going to be in the guild. Oh, bury me. This cannot be happening.
I am giving up the booze,
Lark declares in a wobbly voice. She raises a hand in the air as if toasting, but holds no mug.
Tonight was a proper send-off. Goodbye, drink. I'll miss you dreadfully.
You picked up a few strays, I say flatly, eyeing the two newcomers.
I found more people for our class.
Lark beams at me and then slumps over the bench, yawning. No, you didn't.
Yes, I did. They're right there.
Lark gestures at the women waiting nearby.
Can't you see them?
Of course I see them. It's just that this is a spectacularly bad idea. Eyeing the two dripping women standing in the doorway, I shake my head. You can't just grab anyone off the street and make them fledglings, Lark. That's not how this works. It's a dangerous job. The one from the meeting earlier, the one who called herself Sparrow, draws herself to her full height and gives me a haughty stare.
What makes you think we don't want to join? We know what we're getting into.
Lark chortles.
See?
I cut her off with a wave of my hand, staring down the stranger. Bad enough that Magpie already has a priestess and a Slitherskin and her niece. We're already not being taken seriously because Magpie's a drunk and I'm a Taurian. Two women and a Slitherskin is just going to add fuel to the fire. But Magpie's made promises and I've no choice except to keep them. Might as well lump all our problems into one group and realize we're wasting our time. Every year something like this happens. Magpie takes in the dregs and then none of them pass the guild tests after months of hard work. I then chastise her for her carelessness, and she agrees that I'm right, promises to change, and then spends her days sucking on the nearest bottle of alcohol. The moment students arrive again, she takes in more dregs. Rinse and repeat. I'm a good teacher, but I need students who give a damn, and Magpie doesn't seem to recruit those. She picks the rebels, the wastrels, the misfits, anything that speaks to her. If she was sober for longer than an hour a day, we could probably make it work between the two of us. As it is, not so much. But to add this woman who's already made herself notorious? That's just begging for problems. We've only got room for one more in the class, not both of you. If I put this Sparrow in our class, they're going to laugh Magpie right out of the guild halls.
They're both joining.
Lark says, oblivious to my train of thought.
Her and Gwenna.
No, they're not. Five's the sacred number, remember? I gesture at the door, indicating that the two women should turn around and head back out into the night. You've wasted your time, both of you. Magpie won't be having a class this year. It seems the wisest decision. Magpie's in no state to teach, and if she's not got enough for a class, I can cry off. Lark won't be offended for long. She'll find another job with a traveling troupe. The priestess that Mags owes money to will just have to deal with it. The Slitherskin can find another teacher, as can Gilam. As for me, I'll just have to take on odd jobs until the annual guild fees are paid. I can run as a substitute in a group that needs five but is missing a member, or do rescue runs. We sure as shit can't send Magpie into the tunnels. We've been in worse situations as business partners, Mags and I. And I hate to say it, because Mags is the one who gave me a chance all those years ago. But maybe it's time for me to move on, too. I immediately squashed that thought. If I leave, Magpie has no one but Lark, and they certainly wouldn't be a good influence on each other. I have to stay. And then I think of the Conquest Moon, and my frustration mounts. Why is it that bad luck has to come in a chain? Why can't it be strung out between phases of pleasant monotony? As it is, all this bad luck is a cascade threatening to bury us.
You can take both of us,
the tall woman says, her expression as stony as mine.
I've done a great deal of reading on fledgling classes. Teachers have taken on additional students in the past, but only five can be sent for testing. You can teach us all, and the best five will be tested at the end of the year, correct?
Are you spouting guild law at me? I glare at her as mightily as I can, tired and annoyed. If it were any other person in any other situation, I might be amused at the woman's bravado. As it is, I'm frustrated with Magpie and her reckless niece, and irritated that I'm being lectured by a stranger. You want another guild law? How about the one where women can't join the guild?
Oh, don't start that again.
The woman snaps, interrupting. Without a chaperone's permission, I finish. The woman's jaw drops, and pink blooms on her cheeks. I think I've finally silenced her. Maybe now I can go back to sleep. Are we done here? I ask, my arms crossed over my chest. I eye the two newcomers and then turn to glare at Lark. I don't know what sort of drunken idea you've all gotten in your heads, but this isn't happening. You can just...
How does one get a chaperone?
The woman in brown says suddenly. What? I scowl in her direction. She gestures at me with her hand, indicating that I should continue.
You said we need a chaperone to give us permission. Are there specifics on the chaperone? Does the chaperone need to produce a letter of some kind?
They're truly going to debate this. My glare deepens. Lark speaks up.
Magpie is my chaperone.
The round-faced, shorter woman points at the bossy tall one in brown.
She is my chaperone. Very well, then.
The tall one says, smoothing a hand down the front of her soaked bodice. She lifts her chin as if she's the queen herself and gives me a steady look.
I'm the only one who needs a chaperone, then. May we speak privately, you and I?
I should say no. I should absolutely say no. Something in her manner tells me that she thinks she has the upper hand, and though I'm curious, I also sense a very bad idea in the works. I hesitate and then think of the spectacle she made of herself earlier in the guild hall. No, she ignores me as if I haven't spoken. Instead, her gaze goes to the open door of my quarters.
Is this your sitting room?
She asks, striding toward it.
We can talk in private there.
And before I realize what she's doing, she's heading straight into my bedroom. Me, a minotaur. A minotaur on the brink of the conquest moon. Is she insane?
6. Aspeth. My defiant saunter into the sitting room is going perfectly well until I run into the corner of a bed. I'm not in a sitting room at all, but in the Taurian's bedroom. Oh, well, this is embarrassing. This is also what I get for not wearing my spectacles, but I didn't want him to turn us away on the off chance that he thinks my vision is going to be a liability. Plus, he'd see me as a rich lady, and I can't have that. I'm far more talented than just a pair of blurry eyes would attest anyhow. I just need to have time for the guild to realize that. So I act as if nothing is wrong. I pat the edge of the bed frame and confidently turn in the shadowy room, as if I always planned on confronting a half-naked Taurian right next to his bed, in private. Naturally. I clear my throat as he stalks toward me, a reddish-brown blur with a glint of gold at the nose. I wish I had my spectacles on, because I'm dying to see just what he looks like. If his chest is as hard and muscled as it seems, and if his nose truly looks like a bull's nose, or if it's exaggerated by stories. His face is long and he's got horns, but the shadows and my poor vision hide the rest from me.
What do you think you're doing?
He asks in a low, deadly voice, moving to stand right in front of me, a handspan away. And then I can see everything with clarity, because our noses are practically touching. I can see the golden, strangely human eyes, the long, blunted nose that ends in a golden ring, the horns that sweep up from a proud forehead, the sheer height of him as he towers over me. He is completely and utterly alien-looking, and I want to just stare and stare like the sheltered holder's daughter I am. I swallow hard. I wished to speak to you in private. He quirks an eyebrow, and it is astonishing to me to realize that he in fact does have eyebrows. They're slightly darker than the rest of his face, fur, but the expression is the same. He thinks I'm ridiculous. It puts me on familiar territory. I square my shoulders and give him a challenging look. I want us to come to some sort of agreement, you and I. You help Magpie teach her fledglings, yes? I wish to become one of those fledglings. I'm certain we can agree on terms. Just name them. Tell me your price. He eyes me up and down, his lower lip curling slightly. It somehow looks even more insulting on a Taurian, that expression.
You don't have any coin.
You don't know that.
If you did, you wouldn't have walked here in the rain. You'd have taken a coach.
He reaches out and flicks one of my dripping, deflated, puffed sleeves. Oh, well, he's correct, but I don't intend on letting that stop me. I can find the funds. An angry howl erupts from the hallway. The Taurian immediately turns, pushing me behind him.
What in the god's name is that?
I grimace. That's my cat. I'm afraid it's past her feeding time, and she's quite angry about it. Count on Squeaker to have terrible timing. I have food for her, though. It shouldn't be a problem, and she won't wake the other residents. He turns to give me an incredulous look.
You brought a cat?
Well, yes. The pamphlets I read stated that students of the guild stay at their mentor's nest, that's their lodgings, for the duration of training. This is Magpie's nest, is it not? It looks like guild housing.
I know what a nest is.
He interrupts, waving a hand at me.
You're not going to be a student here.
Why not? Magpie is the greatest of her generation and a woman. Of course I want to learn from her. The Taurian stares at me. Hard.
Look, you seem determined, and while you're getting on my last nerve, I'm going to offer you a word of advice. You don't want this nest. We're a mess. Magpie's not the right teacher, and that means everything falls to me. Taurians aren't respected by the rest of the guild, and so if you're looking to prove yourself, I'm not the right teacher for you. In addition, the class is going to fall to pieces in the next month. You're better off looking elsewhere.
His words make me flinch, because they have the ring of truth to them. It would be better for me all around if I was accepted by the most venerable teacher the guild has, and it sounds like Magpie isn't that teacher. It's incredibly disappointing, and yet, now I'm curious. Why is the class going to fall apart in the next month? He gives me a hard-eyed stare.
Because I'll be teaching.
I wait for clarification. When none is forthcoming, I prompt him again. Why are you falling apart in the next month? He shifts his feet, and I hear the creak of the floorboards under his hooves. His hands go to his hips, and he leans in closer, and I catch the faint scent of leather? Surely not. But whatever it is, it's a good, earthy smell. I'm so distracted by the pleasant scent of him and his nearness that I almost miss his words.
Don't you know anything about Taurians?
I blink, meeting his gaze. Should I?
You're the one who touts her guild knowledge all the time. You tell me.
He gestures at me with one impatient hand. To be honest, Taurians aren't mentioned much in the books and pamphlets I've read. He snorts with annoyance.
Of course not.
So, why is it you're falling apart in the next month again? I prompt. My thoughts are racing. Maybe that month will buy me time. Maybe I can convince another teacher to take me on if this one doesn't plan on instructing for the full year. Maybe...
I can't speak of it,
he says, voice gruff.
You're obviously educated, which means your family is wealthy. I don't want some merchant coming to turn me into a saddle because I told his innocent daughter filthy things.
My face grows hot, and a forbidden little... thrill zings through me at the thought of learning filthy things. The more he dances around this subject, the more I want to know what it is that happens in the next month. I will have you know I am not a merchant's daughter, nor am I innocent. I am 30 and a spinster. You can tell me everything. Please do tell me everything. He runs a hand down his long muzzle, and then tugs at the ring at his nostrils, in a gesture that has to be pure annoyance. His hooves shift again, the floorboards creaking once more under his agitation.
I am a Taurian, about to be surrounded by women on the eve of the conquest moon.
And? I could swear his eyes grow wider.
Woman, how do you think Taurians procreate?
My face feels scorchingly hot. Truth be told, what I know of procreation was learned from lurid novels that use words like waves of ecstasy and spellbinding pleasure, and not much else. I bluster my way through it with confidence, as I do with everything in life. I expect Taurians procreate about the same as everyone else. Procreates.
We go into heat.
His voice is flat.
We rut.
Oh my goodness. My tongue feels glued to the roof of my mouth, and I stare up at him in fascinated horror.
Every 5 years, all Taurians go into season at the conquest moon. Our lives become about sex. About fucking, about taking a mate, about holding her down and pushing.
He lifts his hands as if grabbing some unseen female, and then just as quickly stops himself recovering.
You get the idea.